For all you Rivet counters who insist that there actually are six variants of BMPs, here comes nine versions of the Panzer IV.
Fortified Niche.
Hello, welcome to Fortified Niche, your favorite internet podcast about miniature games that aren't the mainstream three. I am Kassa, joined ever and always by my gorgeous co-host, slash main host, slash host, JC Dent. How are you, my handsome friend?
Hello, I'm waving at the webcam.
I'm waving back.
We're not recording the video, though maybe we should sometimes should. I am despondent, I tell you, about Legions Imperialis getting postponed for whatever later in the year. Ominous words. How about you?
Is that the new Mantic 6mm war game? That looks pretty cool. I'm pretty excited about Mantic going to that. I quite like the GCPDS sort of scheme and design, especially their vehicles. And I think that'd be a cool way to do it. Like, they've got the units to do it, and a big horde 20mm guys doesn't really appeal anymore. But like 10-15mm, I think that could be a sweet spot for that sort of evoking that kind of 40k thing that they like to do with their Warzone game, Warpath.
That's Warpath. That's their Warpath, which they sensibly decided to not go after, not make a game that's 40k in numbers of miniatures in 28mm anymore. It's going to be epic Mantic. Yep. There's still Warzone, which is 4th edition 40k in numbers, and Dead Zone, which is Kill Team in numbers. Dead Zone, the good one. Warzone D also ran one, and Warpath, now a 6mm game.
Which I think is a cool idea. Like, more sci-fi mini games, that kind of thing. Looks sick. Like, I'm waiting for Cold War Commander devs to drop their new version of Twilight Commander. That can't be right. Future War Commander, that looks sick. Like, I'm doing War Commander. I'm going to try Blitzkrieg Commander. Yes. Playing this for a while. This, like, I'm excited that it's coming out.
I'm also looking forward to reviewing Future Commander on the pod. More multi-based sci-fi.
Yeah, absolutely. What do they call it? I can't remember. Anyway, but today we're talking about What a Tanker, with our most long-winded intro for a while, a 2018 release by True Fat Lardies, set in your favorite periods of 1939 through to 1945. A multiplayer game designed where each player has a tank fighting against another set of tanks, or one versus one, or if you're a crazy person, you can do multiple tanks per person, which is not really fun, but you can do it.
Yeah. The Surgeon General advises against it, but you can still do it. There's really not much to say about the premise of the game or the lore. It's, it's World War II. It actually happened. It's real, unlike Birds. And, like, you know, you can...
People say we're circle around.
And you can play it. I don't know if you can fluff it to be girls and Panzer, but
probably. Yeah. I can't see it. Oh, there's no crew, so it wouldn't be as much.
For girls and Panzer, you're still playing the World of Tanks Gale Force 9 game, or the game Gale Force 9 made that was just called Tanks, I think, before they made the World of Tanks game.
So What a Tanker is, like we said, multiplayer plus single player. Plus, I guess you do co-op versus like another player. There's no AI rules, but it wouldn't be hard to do. Like, the tank rolls the dice and then does what it can do, which isn't like hard. Mechanically, it's very familiar to Lardy players. You have your command dice, which you roll per tank, starting at 6 and losing as you take damage of permanent or temporary types. You need like 4 kinds of tokens to represent the tank: being buttoned, having a target acquired, having aimed, and being loaded. And then the universal hex tool, universal tanker tool, which is sort of how you determine the 60-degree aiming sight that most tanks have. It plays quick. It's kind of confusing the first time because there's a lot of, like, every little thing is sort of explained in a... It's not unintuitive. Like, if you had someone explain it to you, you would get through it fast. There's just things to memorize the first time you want to run it for, like, your convention game.
I think the most confusing part for us was the way hits are resolved once you actually hit the enemy tank and the other player rolls saves, and then you like, oh, do I match saves to actual results? No, you don't. And it, you count the stuff that has gone over the saves, and then it gets a little confusing.
Yeah, it wasn't a problem with the game. It was us having our own expectations being brought into the game, which is something that we do all the time. And then once we got past those and like learned how to play it, it plays extremely fast. I played two games in person with a good friend, Doug. We played two games online versus Challenge Tabletop Simulator. And the in-person games took us about an hour to get through, just slamming through stuff. Being at the physicality of the dice is way faster than a Tabletop Simulator. Being able to like glance things on your phone and then go straight back to it, just smash it out. It's a very fast playing game.
I mean, you are fighting tanks. You are fighting spherical chaos in a vacuum. Like, I mean, it's tank warfare as depicted in such documentaries as War Thunder and World of Tanks. It's tanks and nothing but tanks, infantry, airplanes, artillery that don't exist. Shout out to Shut Up to War Thunder players, because I know that artillery and planes exist in that because I played it myself. And
Artillery dismissed. You've got SU-152s. That's like basically artillery.
SU-152 as well. Well, SU-76 is technically probably artillery and stuff, but
if
it plays as a tank.
If you fire a shell the size of a large toddler, you are no longer a tank and you roll into the realm of artillery.
But what if I'm firing on open sights? Does it still count as artillery, or did that boat sail in World War One?
I'm not sure. But am I on a train? That's the next question I have.
Well, this is some fodder, some cheesecake for the rivet counters in the audience. Go fight your favorite friend in the club over what counter doesn't count as artillery.
Yeah, so basically the setup of the game, the conceit of the game, if you pick your side, you can be, you know, British, French, German, Italian, Japanese, Soviet Union, Americans.
French.
French again. And then you pick your tanks, determining like either by year or just like by a points level. Tanks will have like a 5 to 25 point rating depending on their like shooting and armor and technical abilities.
Excuse me. I looked at the Japanese chart. It's definitely, it starts at 3, and if you're Japanese, terminates at 10.
I'm thinking of like the highest one I saw, which was at least 26.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's like tables represent like starting years, eras and years, something for, like the Americans start in 1942, even though they should start in 41 because December was when they declared war, but what do I know? I'm not a big time historical game maker. And you can sort of start there unless the later campaign of your tanks sort of going up in years through the skills as they sort of earn kill rings, which I don't believe any nation other than Germany had, but I'm welcome to be wrong, and I've only got one source for that. But yeah, never heard of like American tank aces, so.
Actually, when you think about it, the ladder might sound familiar to you if you've played any of the video games we mentioned thus far, because the scope or the goal of the game is, I guess, to belt out a campaign play during a single day. And how do you advance to better tank levels? Well, you take your starter tank, which could be, if you're Soviets in 1940 or 1939, two identical T-26s and one T-26 that has more armor or maybe more striking value.
Excuse you, and the Soviets started the war in 1941 and had no part in any previous interactions in World War II. How dare you, sir?
Right.
How dare you?
They're going to take my license away. You take either a T-26 or a T-26 that's identical but has a different numeral, or a T-26 that has a single star difference. And the idea is that you fight until one of your tank gets 5 kills, and then it can advance to a level 2, open up more interesting tanks, and if you can get 5 kills, then you can advance to another level, and if you want to, your tank can remain an ace, and the aces have, I think, initiative benefits, mostly.
There's a couple of things. There's like, I think you draw, they get to draw from the deck, the ace deck.
Oh, right.
The tanker deck, sorry. And there's things like, impressive bush. So you get it's harder for you to target you. You've got a quick snifter to move to restore command dice. You've got hell driving, which means you get to just drive during the enemy activation, which is bullshit and costs them their aim. And it's also very funny.
So if you get to ace level, that's going to be, I guess, great for you. But I think getting to ace level is sort of hard because we ran games at the 1941 level and in 1940.
It's hard to kill a tank.
It's hard to kill a tank. I mean, freak dice occurrences, and I guess like, when tanks are horribly mismatched. Could happen, but
in theory, you need 3 hits in 1 round to kill a tank outright immediately, just regardless.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you need to whittle them down, doing points of damage until they lose their 6 command dice. A tank with 0 command dice bails out, and the crew runs off to live and fight another day, keeping their kill counts as well, because the kill counts kept on the crew, not the tank, which is not weird, but it does feel like if my crew is what matters, why is my crew not statted up or important, really? Progression from the game. That's sort of like the premise, though. The premise is like your tank is what matters, but your crew is carrying on the experience. But there's no mechanical incentivization to have like a better crew, other than like you get access to better tanks, which obviously that's an incentive in itself. But your crews are leveling up. Your commander's not getting better, except for buying better, getting access to better tanks. Which is obviously reason enough as in itself to keep going forward.
For example, the World of Tanks game, it had crew upgrades, if I remember correctly, and also vehicle upgrades. So, like, whichever way you want to take what a tanker, by arguing that the title means that you should be focusing on tankers, which don't actually really matter. But this game is even more beer and even more pretzels than that, I guess, because like surviving one match and going into another might as well be a fresh tank, and unless you get those kill rings, they're all immediately replaceable.
It is strange that way, but it's fine. Like, so your tank, your crew might die at some point randomly, but it's really hard to kill the crew. Crews are pretty survivable except for like extreme disasters.
Yeah, crews are extremely well survivable unless the enemy gets like three or more damage roll successes than you do save successes, and even then I think a crew might survive if the successes are more temporary hits rather than permanent hits.
Yeah.
Which is, see what I mean when I say that the system for determining the effects of attacks is a little confusing?
Well, let's talk rules. That seems like an easy segue to do that.
The
rules are, you roll, like, Panic Command friends will be used to this, where you have your six-sided dice, you roll 6 of. On ones, you get a drive dice. On a 2, you get a target acquisition dice. On a 3, it's an aim dice. On a 4, it's a shoot dice. On a 5, it's a reload dice. On a 6, it's a wild dice. Wild dice can become any other dice and also have bonuses in and of themselves, like rolling extra damage dice or aiming better or initiative bonuses.
Or restoring
temporary damage. Yeah.
Yes, restoring temporary damage. Yeah.
There are also abilities you can have which can make those better. Like, you can have things like slow, so you can't ever have more than 2 drive dice spent in a turn. Or you can have, say, tank destroyer, so you can turn any 1 dice into an aim dice. To encourage you
very
to do those
useful
things. So
fast tanks can turn any dice into a single dice into a move dice, which is also extremely useful.
Fast tank destroyers are the best tank, just because that reliability is always built in, and it means your dice can't spike you as hard as they seem to. Like, nothing worse than having 3 dice and rolling 3 reloads. You can't do anything with that. You just
Free reloads are free useless.
Starting with basically the drive dice. Drive dice allows tanks to move, turn, rotate turrets, or drive
all of those things at the same time, by the way.
Yeah. So the base thing is they can move forward 2d6 or reverse 1d6. And as part of movement, you can move up 89 degrees or less as part of your movement. forward or backwards, I believe. And your turret can move 60 degrees as well. If your turret is fixed, that's on you to know that, and that's on you to realize how that works. I believe they can still have their 60-degree fire arc, because all tanks have that.
Yes.
But I'm not sure if that's also for turretless tanks, which are covered by, like, two sentences in this book, but were kind of a big deal.
This is maybe rushing ahead or something, but tanks have some rules like slow, fast, and tank destroyer, but tanks don't have rules like fixed forward gun. You're just supposed to, like, you know that a Hellcat or something has a rotating turret.
And tanks also, the game is not interested in tanks' weaponry below their main armament. So if your tank has two cannons, like you're some of those weird Russian ridiculous landships, the game doesn't care. Machine gun fire is used as crucial on a card.
Or, you know, famous allied weirdo, the M3 tank.
Yeah.
That also had the weird hull, cannon and the piddly small cannon on top. So you'd think they'd reflect that in the rules somehow. They don't.
It's just kind of, like I said, it kind of reflects back sort of the tank is, there's a level of granularity this game is interested in, and there's some it just does not give two shits about. And it's very clear after a game or two which side it's skewing towards on things. So your movement, you basically need extra dice to move through obstacles, which is the same with like acquisition and stuff. So move and acquisition works very similarly, except there's no rolling for acquisition. So if there's an obstacle in the way, like a bridge or a pond or a stream or low walls, you'll need an extra drive dice to move through that. Major obstacles like hedgerows, bocage banks, high walls, not buildings, will take two dice. You can drive through a building, but you'll die. Almost for sure, you'll die. So don't drive a tank through a building, no matter how cool it might seem to drive your M26 through there. It's going to die, and it's going to upset you. Don't drive through buildings. Tanks, don't do it.
On the other hand, it's very unlikely for you to be ever able to drive through a building, because I think you need three movement dice to initiate a maneuver like that.
You need two drive dice in addition to a third dice to move. Ramming is also an option for all you cool cats out there. It requires four drive dice.
I rammed a Panzer IV with, not a Panzer IV, that was a, I think it was the 35, Panzer 35, and I rammed it with my T-26, and I shouldn't have done so.
Yeah, because ramming is rough. Everyone just takes instant temporary dice loss, depending on how many rolls dice you make.
Dependent on your armor.
Yeah, you roll your armor value, and they take that many hits. There's also minefields, and minefields are probably the safest thing for you to traverse in a tank, because you only take damage in a double, or a six if you're reversing through them. So driving is easy. You get to roll basically 2d6 per single dice, which is interesting, and a nice way to sort of categorize how much like control your drivers have.
And usually we become very afraid when the game starts mentioning angles and degrees, but this game does so according to a hexagonal marking tool, and so you know you can easily tell what's a 60 degree angle or something or the other, like
and like knowing if you're shooting the flank of a tank or the rear of a tank is also incredibly obvious to you, because you're a human being that's playing with reasonable people. If anyone makes it too tough, just get out your tape measures, draw across, and go that way. Acquisition dice work like drive dice. You need one to acquire a tank unless you're unbuttoned. Then you get a free acquisition dice, essentially, which isn't really clear, but it's how it works. Every minor obstacle, you need an extra one. For every major obstacle, you need two additional acquisition dice. So a tank in the woods or a tank like one third behind a building could be behind a minor obstacle and be partially obscured. So you need two acquisition dice to get them, or three if you're buttoned up. Quick note on buttoning. Buttoning means you don't get an extra strike dice rolled against you. Being buttoned is pretty cool, but it does reduce your tank's visibility to 90 degrees instead of 180, which is obviously a big change, and you need more dice to acquire.
But like if you're trying to maneuver yourself into a good position to strike a heavier tank, the only thing that matters is getting there, so being buttoned doesn't impact your driving capability none.
You remain acquired no matter what the enemy tank does, as long as it remains in your line of sight. If you don't have to like stress about reacquiring tanks that have moved a bit, aiming, though, you lose an aim if either of you move. If you shoot that tank and it backs up in terror, you've got to re-aim them, which is really annoying when you roll nothing but fours and fives. Like, ha, now I'm going to win! And then they run away, and you're like, no!
Consequences. Yeah, that's the... Yeah, that's the tank destroyers don't really care about that because they can always transform one of your useless dice, and you're probably going to have useless dice unless your tank has been degraded via fire to, like, aiming, but...
My understanding well, is, as long as you're aimed, you still need that first aim dice per turn to shoot the gun.
Yeah, this one I'm... this one we're not really clear on, but yes.
Yeah, you can aim while unloaded. There's no issues there. And you remain aimed as long as both of you are stationary. And then...
And at this point, you might want to say that, oh, so I just move every turn. And then we get back to our previous point where it's absolutely not guaranteed that you're going to move every turn because you need that silky smooth one to actually move anywhere.
Yeah, unless you're a fast tank, then you always have a one.
Yeah.
And then getting to the meat and potato of these games, shooting. To shoot the tank, you need to have acquired a target, be aimed, and be loaded. All tanks start loaded. No tanks start acquired or aiming. And then the shooting process is kind of like driving, where you turn your shoot dice into a 2d6 roll. And if they're within 48, it's a flat 6. If it's over 48, it's plus 1. Then, like, you've got obstacles and terrain and obscuring of the tanks. And you can spend aim and wild dice to increase your extra aim dice to increase your hit roll by plus 1. And there's penalties as well, like mentioned, obscure targets and terrain.
Being over 48 as well.
Yeah.
Is a penalty.
And they worded a bit weirdly, but it is what it is.
And since you're rolling a sixer on a 2d6, so by default you're supposed to hit slightly more often than half of the time, right? No.
Yeah.
But there are also aiming effects. Rolling doubles. If you score two sixes, that adds two more strike dice. And if you score double once, you become unloaded, and your turn ends, and you unacquire and untarget the target.
Yeah, which is, you know, frustrating. Happens 1 in 36 times, just about 3% of every shot. Sorry.
Yeah,
and then when you hit them, because you're going to hit them, because you're a tank and you're tough like that and smart and clever, you roll your strike dice, which just depends on front, side, or rear armor. Six is always crit. And then have ordinary hits. Generally, the better your angle on the enemy tank, the more likely you are to crit. So if you shoot a tank in the rear, you're going to crit half the time when your dice rolls.
And if you're shooting at front armor, you're hitting on fives and critting on sixes. So
yeah, generally your crit value increases as opposed to your hit value, which I quite like.
Yes, the hit value depends on the circumstances. The crit and pen value depends on where you're shooting the target tank at. And so really the big differences from tank to a tank is their strike value, which is how many dice you roll if you hit a tank, and the armor value, which is how many dice you roll when you're hit. Yeah, armor value is never modified as far as I can say. Whether you're getting shot at front or the back, it's always saving on fives and sixes.
Yeah, but I don't think your armor is ever diminished that way. I guess except mobility.
And then you start counting your crits and your regular successes, because if you deal more... First of all, you see if you've rolled more successes than the target rolled the defense successes. And if you've rolled more successes, then you count how many were crits and how many were regular hits. If regular hits are in the lead, you deal temporary damage, which means the enemy loses command dice temporarily, which can be fixed with wild dice. Meanwhile, permanence cost a permanent command die loss, and then you roll to see if you hit either the turret or the hull, which causes stacking and permanent damage on the tank. So the hull makes your tank harder to move, and the turret makes it harder to aim. Notably, we didn't find rules about what happens if you score 4 permanent hits on any part, because the ladder only goes three places. So if you score four permanents and the tank is, say, already immobilized, then what happens? Does it automatically transfer to the turret? Does the tank explode? Does nothing happen?
So based on the impossible hits rule, where, like, if a tank is hull down behind a wall and you can't physically see the hull and you roll the hull, the target still loses permanently loses a command dice, but doesn't have any further effects. So if you can manage to keep your tank hull down constantly, that could be,
Yeah.
If you've dug your tank in finish style, like, why not?
Yeah, so that gets a little difficult. Reloading is the easiest thing in the game. You're either loaded or unloaded, and you can reload basically anytime. I think rapid fire tanks or something don't need to reload, which is kind of insane.
They need to reload once at the start or end of the turn.
Okay, okay.
So they can shoot as many times before or after that.
And then there's the wild dice, which will most often be used for you to transform them into dice you actually want and need.
Yeah, the dice you haven't rolled. There's also the timing of wild dice, basically when you want it to happen. So you can roll your 2d6 to hit and see if you want it to become an aim dice, I believe. You can make it a move dice after you've seen if you've shot your gun, or if you can actually acquire with your rolls. So there is sort of... You don't ever have to like commit to your command dice spend before you've sort of started your turn. You can wait to see how it goes as it's going. If you spent your first drive dice and you've rolled a 12 move, like, well, cool. Don't need a second drive dice, so I'll probably save it for an acquisition or like a aim or shoot or a reload. Like, yeah, maybe you don't need a reload. Yeah. Maybe like, well, I'll be out of shots. Doesn't matter. I'm running away.
Extra aim dice are always nice.
And like, as we said, as you take damage, temporary or otherwise, your command dice value goes down. Once it's zero, the tank crew bails out.
So basically, I don't know, you probably had more to say about this becoming a death spiral, or are you saving that for the compliment sandwich?
Oh, well, the death spiral seems inherent to anyone who's sort of listened to that. Like, once you start losing dice, it's really hard to get dice back. You need sixes to get them back. But you also need sixes to counteract the fact that you aren't rolling as many dice and won't be getting as many things. And if you don't roll the six, you don't ever get the dice back, and permanent damage never comes back. So you can't even fix that. So if you have, like multiplayer game, imagine, not impossibly, even playing with, like, Panzer IVs versus, like, Germans, where you've got two armor and four shoot, or Vicky Verka, it's not unlikely to have permanent damage done to your tank before you get start the game. Before you've even your turn, you might start two or three dice down, and you can't ever get above that. And then there's also that fourth multiplier effect of, if your opponent is consistently, like, not taking damage, just like saving it or running away instead, but they keep consistently having six dice or getting wild dice to get their dice back, it can start to feel not good in that kind of, I'm losing, and because I haven't got the resource to continue to fight, I'm going to continue to lose. And there are rules for, like, if you're outnumbered 2-1, you can just surrender or, like, retreat. And, like, in any game, you can always say, like, hey, I'm having fun anymore, let's stop. Which is always a valid option, no matter what the rules say otherwise, what your opponent's saying. You can always walk away. Like, oh, fuck this.
If the game sucks, hit the bricks.
Yeah, 100% vibe of the show. It's generally...
I think that's it outside of, like... Of victory conditions, which are either killing all the enemy tanks or like just making the other player concede, or the funniest, most meaningless line in the rules, unless the scenario says so, and three of the scenarios included in the game are just kill points. You just have to win against the enemy. So none of the inbuilt scenarios are helping you any come up with additional victory conditions. And the game as presented just results in a slugging match, and sometimes with more advanced tank destroyers and the more advanced timelines, you can just stay in your deployment zone and just shoot forever, because
4 feet is not a long distance to sort of encounter in a 6x4 board. Like, you will be, even like you get a centimeter, it's still not far.
If so, like, the scenarios are only different in how you deploy. And like one of the deployment zone options is like long table edges. So you're immediately within 48 range. So that's one of the deciding factors gone. And you can be within 48 range if you do corner deployment as well.
Which ain't so, like, yeah. There's also the King of the Ring option where people get reinforcements each turn on a 5 or 6. So destroyed tanks come back, which means the game just keeps going. Which I guess would be fun multiplayer or like a convention sort of thing.
Now this is War Thunder.
But like, keeping it mechanically focused, there aren't any scenario benefit points.
Yeah.
There's no reason to fight the fight. Like, what?
You're just fighting to fight. And
is it like, just kill points?
You don't have infantry that you need to protect. You don't have infantry that you need to kill. There aren't any control points that you need to capture, any jump-off points that you need to spook away. It's just slugging it out in the I don't know, worst tradition of multiplayer RTS skirmish, where it's just like, oh, we'll see who comes out on top.
And in the Grand Gladiators tradition, they do have their extra scenarios in their summer specials. Like they've got their Fury one, where it's like 4 or 5 Shermans versus 1 Tiger. Famously happened all the time, I imagine. But yeah, like it's very make your own fun. Here is all the ingredients. Build your own ice cream. I'm like, oh, I'd rather you give me the ice cream. That's why I've come to the ice cream shop.
I did the large, big, huge Wargaming survey today, and they one of the questions they asked was what part of miniature wargaming that you enjoy was, and one of the possible answers was writing rules. And boy, it's a bit sad that I couldn't downrate that one because it wasn't an option. Another thing was like, what kind of rule books or rules do you like buying? And one of them was like dedicated rules that have everything filled out. And another was like the dedicated rules with home rules. And I'm like, house rules. I mean, and it's like, I can house rule any rule set. Like, none of the game designers are coming to my house and telling me not to house rule. I mean,
no one's breaking your fingers and saying you can't do that. Like,
yeah, what? Ivan Sorensen is gonna mail me Anthrax or something? That's not gonna happen.
What if that happened twice?
Yeah. So you know, every game could be house ruled if I wanted to, but many are so bad that I don't. And also, I'm paying you money, so I wouldn't have to be Mr. Game Designer Man.
Yeah, and I imagine as this is sort of catered towards Lighty players and fans, because it's a Lighty game, they may have some of those specials, so check those out as well for War Tanker rules, scenarios, and like recreating your favorite one, historically or otherwise, wouldn't be difficult with this, with the very variety of vehicles they have on offer. And starting up the missing ones is your favorite, would not be complex either. Which I guess really just brings us to like army building, at which point there isn't any.
Yeah. You can agree on points and start there. So you like say, we're both starting in 1941. We're both bringing like 30 points of tanks.
Yeah.
For campaign, you only get to take level 1 or level 2 or whatever is possible for the nation at that point. Yeah, I mean, cops ain't watching, but there are entry level tanks marked out, and usually they're not going to be the tanks that you want to play in that year. It's usually some of the crappier bottom of the barrel variety that people writing Wehrmacht memoirs wouldn't want you to know anything about. It's we all know that it should always be Panthers and Tigers.
Yeah.
But no, you're gonna take your sad Panzer III that's still doing something on the field in 1945, and you're gonna like it.
Donuts, I imagine, just 6 spinners. Yeah, like the main conceit of the game seems to be that convention style of, I've lined up these tanks, come and have a go. Wait, do something else. Are you waiting for your turn otherwise, or in between other games, like, hey, let's play some of this. We have a bunch of dice out. Let's just put some tanks down in our ruins while we wait between 40k tournament turns. it's not a complex game. It requires a lot of setup space, or otherwise you could make it a travel game quite simply and easily in an enjoyable way. Get some 6mm tanks and just make a little box. Ooh, that'd be fun. But the game itself.
Get 3mm tanks. Doing turret rotation would probably become impossible, but...
everyone gets a hex space, so... And a little spinny bit. We could sort it out. We'll talk about it later. Like there's plenty of tanks to cover everything you want. Army building is just basically pick your favorite tanks and the points that match the list of them that your opponents have given you. Like if you say 30 points, and I'll take Germans, I'll take a King Tiger. You've got 26 points of Americans or British to come against me with. Let's see what happens. Not activated. Weird.
The only downside is, like I mentioned, some of these tanks are not the tanks that Battlefront, the miniature game company, wants you to field on the table en masse. So, like, if you go starting British 1945, you might have some issue finding an example of the Archer, which is like, we put an anti-tank gun on a Valentine to make it a tank destroyer. But it didn't fit quite well, so we mounted it backwards. Notably, no part of mounted it backwards is reflected in the rules. Which part counts as the front? I don't know.
As long as it's consistent. Yes, I'm building super easy. Pick your favorite tanks.
Yeah.
Agree on points. You can even just take your favorite tanks against your opponent's favorite tanks and sort of be like, oh, well, wall's not balanced. Ha-ha! And have a decent enough time.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing U.S. versus the Nazis, you're probably served for tanks. You're gonna have all the major tanks that you want.
Yeah.
If you're playing French, you're kind of weird. Their data sheet has only 1 year, and then it says, "Oh, and then you can go on either playing as Vichy France or the Allied French." And I'm like, Excuse me, sir. I would love to have the options available to the historical, like, French mounted and other tanks be reflected in the table instead of relying me going on Wikipedia.
Yeah, and, like, that feels like a weird loss. But the book is not a thick book. It's 75 pages, yeah, 80 pages. It's a small leaflet to run through. And, like, France, like we said, there's 9 tanks for France. There's no tanks for Czechoslovakia. There's no tanks for the Poles. There's no tanks for, like, even, like, the minor German nations or, like, minor Axis powers, apart from, like, Italy, is there. But, like, some sort of indication of, like, what the Hungarians might have had could be cool. What the,
I mean, Hungarians did have one or two designs, and then they were largely supplied by the Germans. So you could still make a sheet that's about as viable as the French one.
Just, like, another, like, A4 page of, like, hey, you know, minor Axis powers sort of features Hungarian, features Bulgarian, features, you know, Yugoslavian. Mm. Not to be ahistorical.
Okay, I don't think Yugoslavians had any tanks.
But like, yeah, like that kind of thing of like you can run these tanks with minor powers, but you know, minor powers like for me a small fireball. Like other nations and have that really specific historical sort of fight going on of like, okay, these are some, you know, Panzer IVs crewed by Hungarians fighting, you know, in southern Russia versus those Russians and Ukrainians. So, like, that's what they have as well. Like, I feel like maybe it's happening on the Lati side in the forum already, because, like, Chain of Command and stuff have so many, like, historical, like, lists and things you can come from. It's a shame it's not here already. Like, there's only so much time and space you can do things with, but you put all this time and effort in anyway. You've got 2 pages of German tanks, and, like we said, 7 Panzer IVs. Like, you could probably tell me...
And at least 2 absolutely identical T-26s made different only by the numerical designation. In gameplay terms, they're the same.
Yeah. There are a lot of 2-4 tanks in this game.
Yeah. That's one of the downsides of playing early war tanks, because they are really stingy with tank special rules for that. So it's kind of like... just mashing your strike values against their armor values.
Which is kind of a shame, because like early war tanks are sort of like this incredibly wild, cool period where like we're not quite sure what tanks are going to be. Let's just kind of assume the last war will be the same and go from there. And the French build like these insane heavy armored, like the Renault Char 1. It's like, it's an amazing tank. that just fought the wrong war. But like in 1939, it was like doing pretty well. It just,
I mean, yeah, they I guess they try to reflect some of this nonsense by giving Matildas or the French tank a high armor value and low strike value, because the French insisted on their stupid one man turret that's supposed to be the Renault's, the F-17, or I forget the name at this point. But like, there's very little else to say make the tank different for sizes, like heavy tanks, light tanks, and all that.
And that's also the same.
None of them are faster than the other. None of them are slower than the other inherently on their class. And I guess the only real difference is if you are trying to cross a wooden bridge and then you have to roll something, subtract your armor value, and fall into a ditch.
Yeah, there is some strange terrain rules going on regarding like buildings and bridges and stuff, because it's all very, how well do you know the historical like reality of your tank compared to, this is a pretty abstract game that just wants you to have some fun.
That yeah, there's
like,
some
oh, sort of... if you roll over a stone bridge, you may fall into the water. Ha ha ha! Like, oh, okay, shit. I won't.
Yeah, there's some friction between the game wanting to be fast and abstract and the game wanting to be exact about stuff. Yeah, because I guess we already covered all the miniature building stuff. So, yeah. Do you want to start with the sandwich?
Don't we start with the miniatures excuses?
I think we already did miniatures excuses in army building, but okay, we can go through it. 3D printing.
Pendragon 12mm sub looks fucking sick. GHQ.
I also wanted to say GHQ. back on 3D printing, there's like March to Hell. They had a good release for World War II a long time ago. And at least one guy on Shapeways was creating huge packs of tanks where you could even get Romanian and Hungarian stuff. I think he had three packs for like 15mm stuff. It basically has all the weird World War II stuff that you want to...
Wargaming 3D is great for tank STLs and stuff as well. Yes. Along with Wargame Vault, surprisingly.
Yeah. Plastic Soldier Company.
Yeah, the Flames of War People Battlefront, obviously.
Yes.
Speaking of scale, you want to play with is also sort of agnostic for the game. The game is pretty, seems set 15mm, and then someone like Garrett Centimeters bigger than that. Garrett of Fate, I'm not sure.
Yeah. If the war wasn't going on, I'd say it's Zvezda, but it is, so don't go Zvezda. Any else? Any other options for the discerning player? Well, if you already have a bolt action collection, so you probably have a few tanks there. So you probably have some of Warlord designs.
Like honestly, most model kits like Tamil Revel, those would be fine. Like go to 172. That's going to be okay to play at scale. And they're going to get their easy and quick and are pretty cheap.
For 3mm, I don't remember if Odzia lost me. The Polish guys make World War II versions. They definitely made Cold War.
I think you're spoiled for choice. Like, people have been making these tanks for a long time. And if you're at all like German or American or British inclined, you're set. You're absolutely set.
My heart beats for a Churchill 7.
And then sandwich time. I'll let you go first with your opening slice of bread.
I'm going to say that I like how easy they handled the angle stuff with the hex marker.
Oh, for sure.
The universal hex tool. If they also applied maybe X-Wing / Tanks / World of Tanks / Spirit of Glory or whatever the World War One game was that I think introduced the movement templates into it all. So that would make the game even more easy. But it's fairly easy now. And the universal hex shit that's used for like measuring angles is a good idea, I think. Yeah. It makes things a lot easier, especially I assume especially live, because you don't have weird collision issues that you do in the tabletop simulator, because nobody knows what goes on in the heart of a modder.
How do you friction one of the parts of a hinge? I don't understand. Nothing makes any sense, and I'm not getting any coding. The minimal requirements for tokens is good. Like, there's five you need, and one you need one of. The dashboards, pretty easy to cut down if you need it at all. I like the art a lot through the game. The little cartoon drawings are quite cute. Every country gets a couple, and they all look pretty fine. And the examples they use them for also work really well to sort of give you the vibe of the game. Just nice thick lines, very, very effective.
Yeah, the small line, not line art, but the small tanks are cute.
It's very 2D worms, cartoon worms kind of vibes to me, like tanks. Like worms that I get into, like everyone's like a big thick black line around their edges, a sort of not thick line, but like they've got that very defined picture to them. Like the most detailed one is like a Churchill, like Hot Tracer. I think it's Churchill. I don't know. I'm not a tank fan. Tank man. I don't know name, but that's not one to like. and I'll get my first piece of baloney, as in this is some hot baloney. I just don't enjoy the lack of scenarios and think that as a multiplayer game, it doesn't really work because it kind of sucks to lose all your dice before you get a turn, and there's nothing you can do about it apart from rolling better. And this game expects you to roll really well all the time, and there's nothing you can do if you aren't. There's no saving grace. If your tank isn't fast, tank destroyer, you have no reliability in what you're rolling at all. Even though you're rolling six dice, you can just roll six ones. You can just roll three fives and three twos. And that's not unexpected. It sucks. It sucks so much.
Yeah, thinking about it, I don't remember the exact point values of the Shermans and the versus the Hellcat that I took into our second game. But I could have probably run the game with all Hellcats and probably would have still come out on top, because Hellcats would have done most of the same thing that the Shermans did, but faster. And with a better gun.
The Hellcats are three.
Okay, Hellcats would have maybe died, but the Sherman game where I ran four Shermans, or was it three Shermans against, and a Hellcat against his two Yak Tigers, ended up with me losing zero Shermans, because one heroic M4A2 tanked like three or four shots that, you know, damaged it but didn't take it out of the field. And then John Brown, an M4A1, just scooted in and shot the tiger in the side until it exploded.
Yeah, imagine rolling one of your 12 dice as a success. Ugh, terrible, impossible.
Yep.
Which is also like, I know I can be whiny, and I know that like I'm vocal when things aren't going my way sometimes, in a way that's maybe not the best to play against. But it doesn't feel like there's any control I have. Like if I take the Yak Tiger, because I like that it's got 12 dice in both sets, because it makes it easy to remember, and there's a reliability in rolling 12 dice. I can reasonably expect to have two sixes with every one of my strike rolls or every one of my armor rolls. But that's not reality in dice rolls. That's only like probability as opposed to like what actually happens. And so it's sometimes you just get fucked on your dice, and that's all there is to it. And it sucks. And it just sucks to not be able to play the game.
Yeah, I agree with most of those parts, and I guess sometimes you definitely can get shot in the deployment area, even with best of intentions of putting terrain on the table. But then the more terrain you have, the more finicky the driving stuff gets, and
especially the bigger tank
driving
you have, if you have stuff that's a bigger scale, then it's harder to maneuver. If you have things that are smaller, then less so. But it still becomes like, even for perfect shots and stuff, there's no way to reliably have that happen for you. You can't be like, I'm going to forego shooting, just do two hits to you, and you can roll your armor dice. Like,
yeah. From my end, for complaints, I just don't like how mechanically indistinct the tanks are. Unless you're having one of the, I don't know, 9 positive traits in the game, it's just armor and strike values, and it doesn't really feel like I'm playing one specific tank variety versus another specific tank variety. There's nothing that makes it a T26, a T26 or something. Or even, say, 105mm Sherman. It's like, hey, what's the difference? You have one more strike dice for having a howitzer instead of a 65 or a 60, or, I mean, 75 or a 76 yeah. millimeter gun. And it's like, I expected more of the stupid bloop gun on a Sherman.
And I also appreciate that there's no granularity in, like, we are playing at a scale where everyone's in range. Everyone's at, like, that sub 500 meters. If we hit you, it's going to suck sort of point. And if we sort of, if the game was smaller and sort of expecting you to be, like, have that very abstracted sort of dimensionality to it, with, like, the first 12 inches is good range, and then 26, so sort of, like, 500,000, over 1,000 meters sort of damage charts, then, like, longer range is better. That would be a lot of tracking. And I don't think it would make this style of game any better. It could work in, like, a mech tanker kind of game, where your crew matter and everything matters, and you have this big in-depth battle board. But this game isn't that. It doesn't want to be that. And I don't know if what this game wants to be is what I want it to be. So, oh well.
Yeah, it's really hard to say what the where you should take this game, either more abstract or less abstract. Especially in the face of games like BattleTech, or World of Tanks, Adeptus Titanicus even. Those games do a lot more tracking and have a lot of more mechanical levers. But I'm unsure if fewer levers would be the way to go. Anyways, maybe another nice thing from you?
Oh, you could do your negative.
I did my negative. That was about tanks being mechanically the same.
Oh, fair enough. It's all the same thing. Yeah, my other positive would be that, like, I know we whine about it, but seeing the variety of tanks is useful. Having them all there started out, like, okay, that's how that works, how that looks, how that would be fine. There's not a lot of variety of tanks because it's two stats going up by 1 or 2 points. And then the features. But, like, looking at this as sort of a building block for other games as well. Like, I'm excited to see what a Cowboy does, and looking at this and looking at the Gundam mod someone made, TC, for it, but they haven't made any mech suits. But, like, oh, I could do that though. I can feel it on this. I could do that. I could play Water Gundam. Oh, that would be sick.
Personally, I just enjoyed the insane idea of looking at the metagame structure of, say, World of Tanks or War Thunder, yeah, and applying it to a miniature game, because, like, you can't pretend that, like, you know, fight the aces and whatever, yeah, that this is a World War II game, but in metagame sense, it's War Thunder, down to the fact that once you transfer veteran crew to a new tank, they suddenly become absolute newbies who don't know which end of tank to point at the enemy. So that's historical realism if you count War Thunder as history. Something Russian bias. Yeah, that's just,
oh, that's why they've got sandbags as the bonus, because they're Russian biased.
No, that would be if the bedspring frames were a bonus card, not the sandbags.
Yeah, we're going to replace sandbags with tracks. If you're eating the champ tracks, it's fine. It's not, like, going to make your Panzer Faust even better.
Yeah, that would be insane.
I would not play this game as written again, except for, like, a very bored convention with, like, someone narrating it. So I'm gonna go for a second. Years ago, I was hanging out with some of my cousins and their younger kids and stuff, and their youngest were bored, and I was like, I want to play a board game. No one wants to play a board game with me. That sucks. But I brought Kings of Tokyo down because it's easy and it's Yahtzee and it's obfuscated and it'd be fun. And all the children were like, we want to play this. This sounds sick. So what I did was they rolled the dice, and then I narrated the entire thing for them in a way that really appealed to children aged between 3 to 8. And they all had a great time. And I think someone won, but no one cares. This game is basically that, and I feel like it's aimed at the exact same mindset age bracket, except people who have beards and probably like 4 to 5 pints deep. And that's fine. I'm not here to shame you for your choices or like say like, oh, you're blah, 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 whatever. If you don't join games, right? You're enjoying games, right? If you're having fun. That's my main thought. But like, there's no depth to this. There's no thought to this. There's no, you get a bonus for tacticaling someone, but you can sit there. Like if your tank hadn't rolled a shoot when you like had me in the side armor, there's nothing you can do about it. There was never like an alternative where like, aha, I just get to shoot you. Or like, I can fire for effect and win. Like, no, it's just, do you roll the dice? Do you do? If you don't, you don't. And this is a game that suffers a lot more for that than other games. And it brings me back to the point where the American Hellcat is the best tank because it's a fast tank destroyer with lots of strike dice. And it's cheap.
Didn't you say that the Jagdpanther was the best tank?
No, the Hellcat's better.
Okay. I wouldn't play this game in a convention. I'd probably immediately go looking for games I haven't played and to vicariously live through people who are playing Black Powder or something with a bajillion miniatures, or maybe finally see some Perry miniatures in the flesh.
Sure.
And at home, I have absolutely no desire to see some tanks on a spherical cow. I mean, if you're playing World War II, let's go play Chain of Command. Or if we want more tanks on the field, let's go play Battle Group. Maybe Bolt Action. Yeah, Chain of Command, Bolt Action, Battle Group. That's basically the choices I have, and I have no desire for a small, nearly board game experience of mashing tanks together. If we're doing board games, I have Battle for Stalingrad that I've only played like once or twice.
Yeah, I've got Heroes of Normandy, the Cthulhu version.
Heroes of Stalingrad. Yes, forgot the name.
It's also like doesn't feel fast enough to be like, okay, we rounded up our tournament game. Let's just use our tanks to play this. I'll teach you how to play it as we go. Because it's like, okay, you roll your dice, then you're gonna do things, which might mean more dice rolling. Which some things like, okay, you need to roll a shoot, which means you roll 2d6, which means then you get to roll more dice, then your opponents get to roll their dice and block it. And then if you roll a critical hit, it's another dice to roll. And it's like, that's too many things. It's too many things. And also movement is slightly confusing because you sort of can turn as you're going and sort of slide. I just wish, like you said, there were movement trays like Car Wars, not Car Wars, Gaslands or X-Wing, just to say, these are the kinds of moves you can do in your tank. And like fast tanks can do faster moves, or the further you roll, you can like apply these ones. Cause it's just too open. And I feel like it, like few games, it relies so heavily on that game's master running it. The guy in charge of the convention being like, oh, we're doing this, Y, and Z. You've done that? Fuck yeah. This is what happens. Fuck yeah. You've done that? Awesome. Do this. You've done this? Awesome. Keep going. And without that hype man to build you up to the game, you're just sitting there rolling fives and twos and getting really bored.
Yeah, you'd need a really good hype man to get me to go play this instead of go look at the person who actually has a blood and plunder board with ships and all that.
Yeah, but that's like, in theory, that's sort of like who I would see as like the convention sort of appeal at this. Like, and that's a bummer. Like,
it is a bummer. It is kind of weird to see a LARDy game you wouldn't play and all that. It's,
Everyone that's so like, transparently so with that, and like, well, it's still like kind of XYZ, like, no, it's just not for me. Painfully not for me.
Yeah we can get through a lot of clarity, lack of clarity in editing in other titles, but this game just anyway you cut it doesn't bring it for me.
And that's fine. Like, everything is for everyone. And I like that. It's, the people who seem to enjoy this game seem to enjoy it a lot. And I wish them all the happiness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, good luck on your introduction to high school. And I think you do well. Congrats on your GSCEs. I'm not sure if that's the high school definition. You're a child, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Good luck on them TikToks. I'll never join you there.
Yeah, congrats on graduating from the sucker to
Congrats on graduating into all of your adult life is going to be climate crisis.
Anyway, that was What a Tanker by Two Fat Lardies. Apparently, we're not going to play this game. So the outro is just going to be me going,
Yes, and this is the other Two Fat Lardies signing off from their podcast. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.